Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on Facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, 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 it's Solutions Today. My name is Bill. Happy New Year, and welcome, welcome, welcome to this new year, and I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday. And brought in the new year. Wasn't kind of nice to get rid of 2021 with all the issues that we've been abound throughout the country and the world, and start to look at the new year fresh. It's always a wonderful thing to plan the new year and stuff. And we're going to go through some. Since it is a new year, it's time to start to look into the future. That's the essence of the program, as both for the TBI world and the lay world. We're entering a stage of great change. We're in an era of that, not just this year, but particularly this year. I've watched things in anticipation of the program, and I do that anyway. You know, technology and stuff, and I'm not into everything. Sometimes I get a little bit, since I'm in an active data mode in this era of Corona. I just spoke to a couple of people because you can't meet people, so you go onto these online sites. And just to give you an idea, it's not that I'm averse to the technology, but as part of the new social contract, because people meet this way, they often replace, I told it to one of my family members the other day, and they said, well, it's because it's young. And the irony is there was a particular person that I met, and I try to expedite something in person when I'm ready to meet someone. And, I want to make a phone call, have a few chit-chats on that, whatever forum they use. They're really using instant messaging in their software, and you go back and forth, and you seem to be hitting it off, and they ask you questions, and you ask questions. You have a reasonably good profile, which I do, which is very forthright and honest, tells me generally about myself and what I'm looking for, so someone should know, as I look at theirs, and you have a picture up there so they can see you. And if you, this particular one, I was kind of talking okay. She sounded in the area. And right away, I said, well, we'll get together. Let's get in contact somehow on the phone and meet up at some point in a public place, something to that effect. And like I was telling my friend, and then all of a sudden, she comes back and said she lived in an area farther away. Maybe it was her way of saying, no, I don't think so. But then she said, we'll just chat so I could, if I like you, it won't matter if I'm a little farther away, and we'll just chat. Well, it didn't make sense to me because I'm not, as far as I'm concerned, no matter whether this is decent or not, I'm not going to really be interested in a woman fully until I meet in person. So I don't know what she thinks of me, but how she thinks I'm going to, she's going to have a real love for me because, or an attraction or a liking for me just by what I base on instant messages, which is less than, say, a letter writing, because people have started romances writing letters. And I just don't like the system. That's an idea of a technology. Not that I don't know how to use it. And on some business forums and other things, I use it quite effectively. but it's to prove a point or to get a point across. And I do that well, and I communicate and get all sorts of information from my investments and stuff, and that's fine. But this whole habit, and the irony is I told it to one of my family, and they right away said, well, that's, you must be looking at someone younger. And no, it wasn't someone younger. The woman was 56 years old, and she went into chat. And you have some people on these sites, but just a particular area. Some of them put up front that they're just looking for an online relationship or chatting. I'm not interested in chat boxes or chit-chat rooms. I hate them. I've seen a few of them. I have no interest in them. There's ones I play guitar and sing songs and write songs. I'm not interested in chatting online about writing. I rather do the actual writing and playing and singing of the song and do it with musicians, not chit-chatting about it. But to each his own for those that do it. That's what I mean by a technology. I'm not a big texter. Texting is, I can do it. I have communicated a little bit with various people with it. I get them. But I find it creates a communication problem. I play tennis. If you try to book a tennis match texting, it can often get messed up. And it's okay for certain little quick messages or a shout-out, but for any detailed conversation with the abbreviations, it's a whole nother language, and I think something gets lost. And if in my case, if I'm looking for something in which I want to get to know a person, I'm not going to find it. Now, that's my aversion, but at the same time, for my investments, for business analysis, I use a computer, I use all sorts of technology, I'll go to all sorts of websites. And this kind of leads me into my little foray into my experience where the person assumed I was, must have been someone young. No, it was someone older. The old people do it too. And some people, if that's what they want to do, especially with the advent of Corona, we probably are going to have to do it and experience it. You know, people are now Zooming, being more isolated with all the communications through phones and texting, but I think something is lost. I've been to a few music concerts, and I was amazed when I went to the Woo music concert. A large percentage of the people there spend their time talking on the telephone while the music is playing. I'm there for the music. I'm not necessarily there to take out my phone or my pad and communicate and just anyway. But anyway, so that's where I think it gets withdrawn. I also think it leads to a certain amount of social distancing and stuff like that. There's something gained, but there's something lost in it, in the communication. And it tends to make us more lazy. In some ways, with some of the people I know who are teachers that are family members, they've told me what it did to people in high school age. It made them so, since they communicate in the texting realm, they really can't structure a sentence anymore when they write because they're so used to writing in the abbreviations of texting that they lose grip on how to write a sentence. And just if you want to know the history of how writing is lost because of this, and they're very smart kids and all that, but they don't know how to write a composition or a paragraph or a sentence. Well, if you want a history of how people used to have that skill, all you have to do is look at some of the historical documentaries of the Civil War. The way we know what happened in the Civil War is not from the letters of the generals, although they are there, or the speeches of the leaders like Lincoln, Lee on this Confederacy side, and Jefferson Davis and some other speakers, Frederick Douglass and stuff like that. If you look at the way the history is written, certainly the one that Ken Burns did, it's from the letters of the regular soldiers writing back home that he wrote an entire history of the Civil War from these letters with the pictures of the thing. And they're writing their sweethearts. They're writing their wives, they're writing their mothers and their parents and their loved ones. And they tell these wonderfully, beautifully written stories. And we're not talking about the West Point graduated generals on either the North or the South, or these leaders like with the eloquence of a Lincoln. That's there. But the reason why you get the whole concept of the Civil War is from the common everyday soldier writing back. Some of these kids were farm kids with sixth or seventh grade educations, yet they could put together perfectly spelled, beautifully written English that was so descriptive it would blow your mind. That's something that in our, from judging by some of the teachers I work with, especially post-brain injury, where I was looking to improve my writing skills, because it did affect them when I got back to writing. In terms of communication, even emails were difficult for me. So I started taking English classes. I took one from my cousin Faith and then a friend of mine's daughter. I took English lessons with her, and they both ended up telling me the same thing. There's nothing wrong with your writing. And the one that's a special ed teacher, my cousin, that lives in a small town in Georgia, and she told me, your writing's fine. And she's a high school teacher. And she said, your writing's fine. You don't know what I deal with. And that's where she told me the story of the children who have, you know, high school kids of this age, or this was years ago, but it's probably worse now, who can't write a singular sentence or structure. Me, I might have some corrections in the English. I might go run-ons, but I can write a complete sentence and always with spell check now. You don't have trouble with spelling. And I'm dyslexic, so I always had a little trouble with spelling when I was younger. I reversed the E's, so it was known I was dyslexic. So I had a little issues with English initially or spelling because of that. But I've since adjusted to that. And so, but that's the idea of how technology, and it's part of the future. And that goes into what we're looking about in the changes in this current year that we're going to face both as a TBI community and as a lay person, meaning it's you don't have to be a TBI to be aware of these changes. Let me forewarn, like I have about these particular technologies, you know, you're going to like some of them and the changes that are coming about, and they're going to happen fast, and you're not going to like some of them. You have to tolerate those that you don't like. I think it's the way it is. Like, just like some things of the past, as you go through life, they start to disappear. Whatever it is, it could be a cake mix. It could be a particular style of food. It's certainly the style of contemporary music. Clothes, dresses, you know, we have attachments to things, and things change. The only guarantee, the world is not the same now as it was even a year ago. Things have changed. It happens rapidly. There's always a sadness when I look at pictures of, historical pictures of where I used to live. You know, I come from New York, so everything's almost the same. But there are spots that you look at in the world. I lived in Dallas, and there's whole neighborhoods that are gone and that used to be there. And it happens pretty quick. In New York, it lasts years. In other parts of the United States, it might disappear after 25 years. It's changed totally. Anyway, it's like it didn't exist. So these are things that we're going to have to adjust to. Now, in the TBI world, some of them will be beneficial. Note that as we look at the New Year's, these are some of the changes that you can anticipate. And I'll go about some of my personal observations because of how I've dealt with these changes or used them as a planning tool. And ironically, it's the TBI that I had close to 20 years ago that probably led me to have more skills in how I deal with things in conjunction with my experience in my prior life prior to my TBI, which I still retain some of those skills. I've just realized it now. And I'll explain them so you can get an idea how maybe you can navigate your life. But some of the changes that we're looking to be had, one is that we're going through a transportation revolution it's really going to start to kick in this year. EVs are going to be taking over the highways very soon. If you look on any stores, if you need evidence, go to your local department stores, your grocery stores. They all have charging stations in them. I went to my Bank of America branch down the road, and in the back of the bank they had six of them, in which, of course, they had a metered charger. And plan on buying an electric car because every company is coming out with them, and they're getting more and more cheaper. They're getting more and more faster. The charging times are faster. The range of them is increasing. And it's going to change the way we operate. And as we move forward, the kind of the spreading, even in the first budget bill, the one that Biden did get through, I think it was the stimulus bill last year, which was signed, not the social spending program that was rejected. Well, in that is all sorts of money for EV investment and also, charging stations, which will be all over the place. And, of course, to save money and not have to pay people, if you have one in your house, which will be either a plug in the wall or some fast charger, I'm sure they'll speed them up. And they'll speed it up probably where it would be charged almost immediately. And the length of these charging abilities on these vehicles are now reaching the $4 and $5 mark. They're even talking about them going 1,000 miles. Well, literally, it's better than a tank of gas. And to build EV charging stations is much cheaper than a gas station. Now, I'm sure the gas stations will start putting charging stations in them, probably superchargers that charge very quickly, and they'll charge money. Most people will use them because it's much cheaper to just charge your car at home, and they'll work situations will probably do it. Just go down to any of the banks. They're all starting to put in charging stations. In addition to that, there's going to be another technology that's coming around, and that's the EV batteries, not EV, but autonomous driving, which for our community is going to be a game changer. They already are doing this in certain zones in the country. Once they expand the zones, there may be a day where when you have a procedure being done or you have the doctor's appointment, you just have your own car and just tell it, Dr. Smith, and the car will take you there. And you don't have to drive at all. Think of what it's going to do to the elderly. Now, of course, we're all going to have a little bit of discomfort with this. And I certainly am chewing on the fat on that. But considering some of the accidents I've been in, it might not seem to be a bad deal. I guess the car could get in a wreck. I wonder if you actually get an insurance waiver if you're using the autonomous call. If you can't be, therefore, you couldn't be at fault. Interesting debate how they would decide that in court, or how would they decide that, you know, if you're driving the car and you hit someone, oh, well, I'm not responsible. The car was driving. It's the car's fault. You're going to, get it on his license. Anyway, but interesting changes. And now you may like some of these changes, but if you don't like them, what I try to practice is an acceptance of that which I'm not comfortable with. And the way you rationalize that, at least in my head, we can talk about the good old days. We can wax about all the nice things. We have a tendency always to remember the good old days as if everything was wonderful. But if we really look at it, on what we have in our modern societies, the good old days had a lot missing. As much as I've complained about the social media and the iPhones, I like my iPad. I'm going to get a smartphone because I have investments I need to keep track of at all times, meaning mobily, and I use it all the time, my iPad, which is the same thing as a smartphone. I just don't have phone connection. I have a flip phone, because when I was in the hospital, that's all I wanted to get, because the cheap thing I had fried. So I just wanted to communicate with people while I was in the hospital. So I got a flip phone from, you know, my carrier. Now I'm debating and I'm trying, and eventually I'm going to get a smartphone, and I'm going to use it. So no matter what I use, the irony is I'm used to it, like I'm used to my computer, like I'm used to my mobile phone. I'm used to my mobile phone anywhere I want to. And if I go back, and I think, my God, if I went back to when I was in the 1980s, what did I do? I had no phone. I had to wait until I went home or use a payphone with a quarter. You can't find payphones anymore. And we waxed it. That used to be part of our culture. They made movies about people in payphones. Now it's gone. And we can be sad like we do about many things, like they did about horse and buggies, and they'll do about gas cars and stuff like that. But that's just the way it is, and you have to adapt, and you have to tolerate that. And learn to appreciate what you can. Don't go crazy and stuff. And remember, the kids that love what they love now, in 20 years, it'll be passe, and the next generation will have implants in the side of their heads that'll communicate, and they'll look at, you know, their parents that are walking around with, texting. What are you, crazy? We talk, we just look at each other, and we can send signals through the electronic device we got implanted in the side of our head. We don't text. We talk. We just send mind thoughts. So those are the kind of things, and there's always downsides to that. But these are some of the changes that we're going to have in our country. For instance, also, and this has to do with the medical field as well, it was accelerated with the isolation that was brought on by Corona, and it was, but it was going that way. Retail is definitely getting depressed. Some aspects of city life was getting less important. People want to live in smaller areas, and the idea that people are going to go to an office now, companies have now, I've seen numerous companies, when they were able to farm out and people in their houses with a computer, they can monitor them just as much as on their computer, phone, and everything else. They don't need to be standing over. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing 24/7. They probably can look at them on a picture, a camera, and certainly can monitor their phones. They know when it's being used, et cetera, that they're on the phone that they're using for the company. And they can be just like they're there. And think about the amount of money the company saves because of that. And I've talked to some people who are now working at home, and they like that. They get up in the morning, have their coffee. And I will tell you, since I had my TBI, and I had to learn, I'll explain how I've used the construct of TBI to actually improve my financial position because of being able to essentially work a job in sporadic amounts of time, because I can't work a full-time job. I tried it one time. I never could. I can't maintain something for that long a time. But you can still work sporadically and get the same thing done. You know, just do it an hour here, an hour there. So everything I chose post-TBI was always in a certain limited amount of times where I could always put it down after a period. So I learned to organize in that fashion. Post-TBI, using my skills I had before but transferring into a different energy level, high functioning, in which I could pace myself without burning myself out, as we all know when we suffer TBI. And these changes that you see in this culture, for instance, as I look for certain investments and maybe another place to live that's in an area here near a lake, and they kind of have everything at this community. They have garbage disposal. They have grounds maintenance. They have all sorts of They even have their own emergency medical stuff, fire department, all this within the community. So that's what you're seeing, because if you don't need, cities were designed for people to commerce. And if think of the expense companies are going to spend on renting office spaces, well, then that's probably not going to happen as much. And because think of the amount of savings it has, especially when you can do it. Well, this also makes us a more segregated and a more isolationist society, because we're going into areas like with that social dating site I'm on, in which essentially we're communicating on within a computer software. Well, that's another form of isolation. Corona really accelerated this. I haven't really played in clubs in a few years. I've done Zoom concerts. I never found them particularly pleasing, jamming over a Zoom machine or a camera on a computer, because it's really not great acoustically and stuff like that. And so we've gotten a little more isolated. Now, I think this will change. At least I hope it will, because I plan lots of travel. And I plan to go out to meet some people, especially if you're in the active dating focus that I'm in. I want to go out and meet whatever women I'm interested in online. I want to go out and meet them. And so either first on phone and definitely in person to see if it's anything worthwhile. Needless to say, so we're going to have these kind of changes, and I've noticed it in young people, has led to a little bit more increased social isolation. Some of the technology communication, like I said, even me, who's a little older, who experienced not having them, understands and appreciates the benefits, and now I come to rely on them. Well, I couldn't think about being out with a cell phone. I couldn't think of being out with a computer. And pretty soon we're not going to think about being without an EV or an autonomous car. We're going to like it one day if we're not feeling as well, where we just jump in the car and we say, Sadie, take me to Dr. Smith. Or me and the wife, we're going to Pontiff's Italian restaurants. Or we're going to go to the Rib Shack. These are the kind of things that we will eventually be uncomfortable with, that we will get appreciative. And I'll get into some of the medical advances and how it can relate, and then how you can plan your futures, as I'm going to do. And I can only use me as an experience and what I see in terms, because I've discovered in my evaluation about what my plans are that I've actually become a very... probably forced into it by my TBI. I've become a very chess player-like person in terms of how I plan my moves way in advance. I already got years planned moves, and I go through the scenarios in my head. If this happens, this is what I do. I mean, I've got all these contingency plans, and analyzation is part of it. And I think that was formulated. A lot of my experience in running small companies, which I had that, but in that I always found it was restricted in the fact I was always playing for that quarter's or that month's sales. So my futuristic hope was there, but it was there in such long distance. Most of the time I was like any salesman, because essentially I was a salesman when you're trying to turn a profit running a mid-sized company where you're selling alarm systems or something, which I did with ADT. And you're set up the sales staff, set up the telemarketing, set up the production department, installation department, and whatever secretarial pool for accounting you need, billing and stuff like that. Well, once you get your system set, what you're striving to do is lower your costs and increase your overall sales volume and increase your profit margins. Those are the things you're working on constantly achieving each day and each month. And usually in my case, I had like a monthly bonus tied into my production. If I reached certain figures of profit, I would get extra money other than my salary. So you're always in a much more short. Since the post-TBI, I had other goals in my mind since I wasn't working. I used those skills that I developed over in that 20 years of both sales and sales management and then running small mid-sized companies. And I mean small mid-sized companies, maybe 50 to 100 employees, sometimes less, sometimes a little more, but could anywhere from 20 to 50, depending. And I did it about four or five different companies and did it quite successfully. And remember, before that, I was on total commission for years. And even when I ran those companies, in a sense, you're on commission because you either make a profit or they're going to fire you. And a couple of times I did lose they threw me out because, you know, if it didn't look like you returned, you know, that you're the running it, you go, just like a football coach. So you learn the hard way. And in sales, the way you learn is not the hard way. If you did not produce, you weren't going to get a paycheck. No paycheck, no food. That's pretty much motivates you to get up and do it. And it gives you, it also, that's what gave me such an entrepreneurial spirit when I was laid off and I really, you know, when I was told I couldn't work anymore and I did little part-time jobs. But in the end, when I had some advantages, I used it, and essentially I went back on commission and did things to increase my wealth, which isn't drawing a salary. It's just expanding what you do have. And it's post-injury because as this will help other TBI survivors that because of our injury, us planning out becomes more important. Because since we're affected in terms of the amount of functioning hours we have, which becomes fatigued and constricting, that means we have to plan when we are going to have how much high functioning level. My therapist at the time said it was probably about 10 hours a week of high functioning, and the other times I can't do anything. And I think it's probably up to about 20 now. But that means I have to rest in between, maybe 15 to 20. It might have increased because of the discipline I show towards it. But I still fade. And when I fade, it means I can't do anything. And I'll give you an example how it can affect people who don't have a TBI that suffer from it. I kind of never had a way to put that into that concrete word very well, even with all the support groups and therapists and neuropsychologists and neurologists I had over the years, until I had surgery on my foot about 2 or 3 years ago from playing tennis. And I was talking to he's a podiatrist. He was going to do the surgery. And he cut my foot and he was going to do the surgery. And we were talking and I told him about my fatigue level. And then he told me something. And this is a high-end surgeon, a bike rider, very healthy guy. And he told me, he says, yeah, he says, that's why I do my surgery on Friday. I said, what? He says, yeah, I have to do my surgery on Friday. I said, why? He says, because when I do all my surgery day on Friday, well, after I do 8 hours of surgery, the next day, I can't program a microwave. I can't think. I'm so wasted. It's because he's burning himself out. Because think about it. When you're doing such intricate, it's such focus and concentration. And if he did it during the week like a Monday, he'd be wasted for the patients he has to see during the week because he wouldn't be there. You know, he's a physician. You know, you can't be not aware. If you can't program a microwave, you can't look at someone's ankle. You wouldn't have the brain power to do it. So he understood it from that level. And with my TBI, that's what I began to understand. And that's why, as a suggestion, we can put this in both in terms of how you do your normal life, but much more importantly, how you can plan for the changes that are coming about. And some of them are good and going to be in medical, too. I'll get into that, the advances and stuff that will be helpful. And then I'll give you examples of how I've used it for my negotiation in my life post-TBI with the actual TBI as the structure on top of the experience I had before the injury to plan my life and this, is that when you look at, as you go into your world as a TBI, the first thing you're going to have to plan out is the levels of energy you have with your doctor, and then find out what you need to do, and then you try to manage your week, your time, in incremental ways that you can accomplish what you do. In my case, I'll give you my experience. I was so broke when I first was on disability. I had so limited amount of income that I could only work. We talked to a therapist. This is how my planning started post-injury. I had to acknowledge my fatigue first with my neuropsychologist, where we agreed it's about 10 hours a week. I still needed to earn some money at that time while I was on, I was getting so little money I needed like $400 or $500 a month or something like that on top of what I was getting. $900 a month in Social Security is very limited. $800 might have been what it was at. Anyway, so I had to. And we figured out, and I got a job through the support group I went to, in which I took care of a man who was elderly on Sundays only for about 8 hours. And I wasn't a super caregiver, so he wanted the company. So I'd make him meals, clean up. Occasionally I'd have to take him to the bathroom, but that was about it. And he liked my company, and I was there, and I did some, I'd clean up the place, make him lunch, talk to him, take him out, and sort of like that for 8 hours or so. Occasionally I worked extra hours. I got along with the whole family, his wife, her mother. These were all wonderful people. I ended up taking care of him. I wasn't the best technical caregiver, but one thing I did give him, I gave him his dignity. And I'm kind of a strong personality. I'm not the typical person he would have seen. Me being a custodial work, it wasn't exactly up my key. Matter of fact, cleaning someone from the bathroom was such an important to me because I'm squeamish about that. I don't even like to see babies. It's not my thing. But the way I did it is I used God and Jesus as an example. I remember it was like 2 or 3 times that I did it, and I was dreading it so much. And all I said to myself, if Jesus could clean the feet of slaves, I could do this. Because if Jesus did the feet of slaves, he would have done this. And once I did that, I realized there was nothing. If Jesus could humble himself by doing that and take honor in it, I could do the same, and I did, and I got through it. Gave me the strength to get through it. I said, if that Jesus could do that, he would do this, so therefore I can do it. And so, but the reason I picked it was because I only had to work one day a week. They paid me cash money because I made so little I didn't have to pay taxes on it. I always told the IRS the truth, and they always said, don't bother us. You're making under this. We don't need to hear from you. And so that was the beginning for me. It also gave me the confidence that I actually functioned like a person. But then we have to get into the planning of social activities. So what I'd do is each week I would plan out with my therapist at that time, the high-functioning hours I would have, the activities I would have. I would forgive myself. I still have to do this. Sometimes when I get forgive, I've got to forgive myself that I can't take care of what I can't take care of. And very often I'm lousy at housework because of it. My places look not dirty in terms of junk, but all that papers pile up and stuff like that. I just don't get to it. And particularly now, since I'm far more active. And eventually, because I'm going to be in a good financial, I'll just get it made. So I'm not going to have a problem, so I can devote myself to the highest functioning things. But once you develop that, That's where you start to build the building blocks and the restriction of the brain injury. And I find it actually gives me more effectiveness than my pre-self. Because like I said, in my pre-self, where I had to not organize my energy levels, and I work full-time, my concept, like I told you, of what I would do, whether I was in sales, I didn't have a long-range view. Maybe in general, I wanted to make X number of dollars by the end of the year or by this time. Or eventually, when I was in sales, I wanted to run companies and maybe I'd be making six figures. Well, when I did that, I only thought of making the goal that month. It was very short-sighted. You can't think about what you're doing. You can only think about the sales this week. So it was usually, let's get it done this day. If I make this mark this month, I'll make bonus. I'll make this percentage if I reach that figure. And that's the way it worked. And in my case, when I ran companies, it was I was based on the profit margin between the sales amount versus the cost of the sales. And cost is everything included. You know, you just don't go by the gross, because if you sell a lot, but it's costing you. So you have to do the cost per sale. So that's where I would earn bonus, and I had to keep it within certain ranges so the guy would make a profit on his investment. And so as you go into, so when I had this and I began planning out, because of the fatigue, long range amounts of planning for investment and time, and then putting in activities in there and how I would go about them, and organizing oneself to get into longer range planning in terms of what your goals were. And then what I did is I taught tennis, and I put that into my thing because I could do it 10 weeks. And then my mom died. And when my mom died, she left me a little money, not tremendous amounts, maybe six figures or one six figures, probably $100,000 I had, give or take. And I had managed to buy a townhome to reduce my rent, so that was a thing. So when I had a few bucks, and this is probably no more than 10 years ago, I was thinking, well, I'm in this townhome, I've reduced my rent because of that. My rent's very little because I bought a townhome at the right market price. I got the right kind of place in the right area by doing research. I was actually working. In a sense, what I did was, from the buying of the house, buying of my cars, I used every opportunity to use those things as ways to increase my overall wealth. And as I went down, I looked at I had some cash. I bought some other items. And then I looked at a stock. And I looked at turning, I did enough research on looking where to invest. I'd spent hours and hours. Like some people get up in the morning, and I looked at it like this. One, I was a commissioned salesman. I said, well, I can't earn a paycheck, but I can incrementally, within the restrictions of my energy, I can incrementally investigate this stock. Well, there was a few of them I looked at, not just the one I picked, because I had to look at different things. And I analyzed the markets, I analyzed the industry, I analyzed the particular company, I analyzed the area it was in, I kept digging and digging. And I used it, I analyzed it for about 6 months until I made a decision, and I've kept a log of the market. So I bought it for pennies a share in 2013. By the time I bought it, and it was still pennies a share, just dirt on the ground, I had managed to be so confident in it. I even told people at the time, this is going to make me a millionaire. Of course, no one believed me. But what they didn't understand is I just didn't make any investment. I used my time, which I considered like it was my job, and I'd get up in the morning, have my coffee or my breakfast, and like anyone else, I would get up in the morning, and like a job, I'd go to the computer and I'd put in my work. And I'd put in, 3 hours here, 2 hours. So all of a sudden, I'm working all the time. And I considered that's my job. And it was investigating continually my investment to the point where I passed on selling it when it went up, and to the point where now, not only is it going to be, as of now, I'm way over my initial investment. I'm into the multi-six-figure ranges, near $1 million and plus over. As of now, we're eventually at this point, because I made more research through the last 7 years and holding on to it, and made some financial moves in order to maintain holding on to the stock. And eventually, by last January, selling parts of it, very little, and just getting my money out. And so now what I have in there is just profit. And it's fixing to take off for me. And that was all because of, as I've analyzed this, and with the good Lord behind me, because I was ethical in how I did it, that was because of the kind of planning I needed to manage my brain injury. My experience at the other helped in terms of my experience before the brain injury, helped me a great deal because I was a salesman who ran companies. So that was part of what helped me organize this, certainly in terms of knowing how to research and stuff. Because when you run a company and they just tell you, here's the budget, go get it started, you have to sort of invent everything, rent the office, hire the staff. So you sort of have to know how to fly by the seat of your pants. And that's sort of like you have to know how to solve, problem solve constantly and do the research right away. I can do research. If someone tells me they need this, I can usually find the best deal, whatever it is. I can do the research, cross-reference it. Other people are computer whizzes who are younger than me. I can take a computer. By the end of it, I can find the best deal online that anyone could come up with. And so I did with this stock, and it was continual. And at this point, it's now at the precipice where it's going to skyrocket. By the way, it is a lithium stock. It's a wonderful lithium stock. I bought it at penny ranges. It's now at $30 a share. I have many. It's vacillating around $1 million for me now in investment, in profit, a little over, a little under, depending upon how high it is. Doesn't matter. It's a launch point because it's fixing to go into production at one site, build another, and get into all sorts of partnerships. I don't know how much it could be. But at this point, I'm in the millions of dollars of range in terms of what my efforts are. So I look at this now as my profit. So what I will tell you is, in this conclusion, I could not have done this because of the limitations of my experience and the way I look. It was the psychological organization and planning of my TBI that helped me have the kind of insert and organization to be futuristic. Because I wasn't, when I invested and looked at this, I had to foresee what it was going to do. It's now, 8 years later? And understand that that was the patience. That by doing the research, I knew what it was going to be. I didn't pay attention to anybody. I listened to some of the programs like Jim Cramer, or they're way behind the curve. To this day, they don't get it. And in my case, because I did the kind of research, I bought it when it was pennies. The best analogy you can come up with who I used as a metrics, there were three or four people I used as a metrics for, who I studied. In terms of, as a pastime, most people will read books or watch trivial programs. I spend my pastime studying and watching documentaries, and there's now things in terms of where you can get a la carte TV these days. I studied all the great businessmen of the last 100 years. I'm talking Henry Ford, Alvin Edison, Gates. I mean, go on and on and on, and how they invented industries, where they came from nothing, to the Heinz guy, the guy that invented the ketchup, to the Coca-Cola empire, to the Mars empire, to Hershey's. That's what I spent my time doing, like an education. And the best thing I could come up with, since I was investing in lithium, and by the way, I'll let you know the stock so you can invest in it. It would be a bad investment now. It's not at the penny ranges I got. You won't get in, but it'll be a good investment because it'll go higher. And but so I looked at, because of the audio industry, I looked at Tesla. At that time, Tesla was like the only electric car company. I think Chevrolet might have had something with their Leaf back then. This is really in 2010, 13. I was starting to think about this in 2013. And I looked at Tesla. I didn't want to invest in Tesla because it was so expensive and so inflated. It made me nervous because I said, and I'm trying to think, how do I make a decision? And then I realized, of course, like everybody, lithium was part of the, this is how you organize yourself. And I'll try to transfer this and how you could do it in everyday life. And then we'll go into some planning for this year and how I'm going to go about it. And that'll lay out some of my plans. And to give you in my analysis, and this, you, again, you can use my experience as an analogy for yourself. Then the question is, well, what do you invest in? And you have to then therefore say, well, I guess lithium would be a good thing. Well, which lithium mine company? There was some standards in this. And so I finally came across one that was near the going to be near where the Tesla was putting their Gigafactory. I knew Tesla was going to pick it because of the lithium in the state. And there was this company called Western Lithium at that time that had all this lithium in the clay out in Nevada. And I said, well, and now I have to get an idea of, well, how does this take off related to Musk and his electric cars? Because it was really just a few then. You know, everything else was gas cars, and the gas mileage was good. It was pretty cheap throughout that decade at that point. And then I looked and I looked and I looked, and I finally, I saw them. And then I thought about it. I said, well, maybe it's in the past. So what I saw a program, and I looked at the prior century, because we have a matrix. We have the we have gas cars. And I said, well, let me look at this. And I went back and I looked and I said, well, what about the, we're doing EVs. Well, I looked at all the car companies. You think Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, and there was other car companies. There's probably about 10 of them. And I looked at them all and I realized the ones we know that are successful are not necessarily the only ones who weren't guaranteed to be the ones that were successful. They, you know, Ford invented the assembly line. So when I looked at the EV, knowing that other companies, I don't know if Tesla is going to make it. Maybe it is. At that time, looks like it is now, but we didn't know then. And there are other companies. Some of them didn't start out and didn't make it. And, of course, we've got the big auto manufacturers now getting into it. They're going to eat up some of the big boys. Maybe some of the big automakers might not make it. Who knows? Maybe they'll make a good one. It's competition. You know, you have the Japanese, you have the Chinese, you have the English, you have all the auto companies. And they're already baked into their profits with their electric cars. So for an investment purpose, it wasn't there. So I looked at the last century, and then I realized lithium was it, because what was the value of the gas car? And it turns out it was gasoline, because the reality is the reason I picked lithium, and the one I picked One, it was in a location in the United States, not in a foreign country. Two, it was just underdeveloped, and I knew Tesla was moving its gigafactory. I did the research. I figured out he would pick Nevada. He did. Why? Because it had lithium. The other places he was looking to put the mine didn't have any lithium. So, because if he was going to do it in a state that didn't have lithium, he might as well build it near his car factory, right, which is located in Red Run, California, or in Texas at that time. He had some offices. Why did he pass Texas and others? It's, one is because he was going to pick the state with lithium. So I knew that that was a good case. And then I analyzed those auto companies back in the old days. If you pick one, you could pick the wrong one, you'd lose your money. They went bankrupt. Well, who was to know? It was going to be Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, whoever, right? It might have been this one. And we've had many auto companies, you know, go under. There's been a few of them. I don't know. There was one big one that was around for years that was competing and then went after a certain period. They had one car they had to run on. And Ford at one time was teetering because of changes in how they became outdated. So I looked at, and sure enough, the one company that at that time, and I looked at the one, and I looked at a penny stock of the 1800s, and who was buying up all this junk farmland. There was an accountant, and he had this company, and he was buying up all this, and he had a byproduct from oil, and the byproduct was gasoline, and the name of the company was Standard Oil, and the guy that was buying all the junk farmland that had oil on it was John D. Rockefeller. He's the one that made a fortune. By the time the automobile hit the market at the turn of the 1900s, during the Roosevelt Teddy, that is, administration, and that time, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, he owned like 90% of the U.S. economy. They had to break up Standard Oil because it was so much of a monopoly that he had everything tied down. That's where I looked at what lithium could do in this company. And I realized by being, instead of owning the farmland, it's better to be owning the river. And so that's where I analyzed it. Now, when you take planning in those labs, you can apply the matrix of learning how to navigate your brain injury with whatever experience you've had in your prior life to negotiate. In my case, I was commission salesman. And essentially, when you're running a company, you're essentially a commission organizer, salesman, whatever. You're running something. That's a sales operations, essentially. And you're doing it for profit, which is essentially commission. You're based on what you produce. And so when I fell into, I had some money, my mother left me, and this investment, I used the incremental, then I transferred the brain injury with that experience and background in sales and research, and I used the incrementalism of time that I began with my neuropsychologist way back and figuring out how I could work part-time, how I could use my time effectively, how to balance it. I used that time and combined it with the sales. I used it to figure out how to pick the right stock by doing enough research and confirming it by working that incrementally. And at the same time, because you began to do that initially, you begin to look at the future. Because in order to figure out this stock, I have to see what's going to happen and do the research to figure out what's going to happen, likelihood, and do the research to figure out, get the information to understand what's likely to happen if X, Y, Z happens. And you begin to see what it will be like in 2 years, 3 years, to the point where I knew exactly where it was going to be to this day. I know what's going to happen this year. I know how well set I am. I've planned it. I've planned myself financially. I strategically sold a little bit so I financially can wait until it really bears fruit. And because you have to have a wide window with these things. They don't always happen in the exact time you want them to happen. And that's the way you can apply this kind of stuff to your life. Because the brain injury gives you that advantage. Because you have to reorganize your thinking, like I did, with limitations on that thinking in order to be functionally effective. It led me to be able to plan this, think about it, invest it, and now, as we move into this, I'm looking at the future. I'm starting to, like a chess player, I'm planning out my moves ahead of time in my head. I'm already structurally organizing all my moves that I'm going to make over the next year. And options, you know, I'm flexible in, you know, when my investments will pay off, who is going to help me with it, what's going to be, what I'm going to do with the money. All these things are now part of my planning and research. It's not just saying it. I actually do the work to study. While other people are chit-chatting on Facebook pages or chit-chat rooms or even dating sites, I don't have time. What do I chit-chat on? Information about the stock, information about what the world is doing, not just the stock, but the world that I'm going to be into economically moving forward. Remember, we're in inflation now. A little, just a side note, just so you all know, if all of you who are in the TBI world are looking for employment now, now's the time to figure out what you want to do and where you want to go. Because if you think this employee shortage is going to last, take my word for it, eventually it will dry up and disappear. And it'll be back to the advantage of the employees. Mark my words. This is a temporary thing. And will end one day. And so we have to think about it. I'm already analyzing at some points, as eventually my stock is going to bring me thing. I'm not particularly, because it's such a good stock. Standard Oil made money in the Great Depression. Because when you have a commodity like what I have, and that's going to transfer the world, I'm not worried about it. But I know that eventually we'll hit a recession. I'm already planning for that option because at some point I'm going to have the kind of cash to take advantage of it. So you focus on that. So that's part of the analyzation. Do not depend on the TV programs for information. They're so far behind, it's not even funny. And when they report on a stock that I know so well that I can verbatim tell you the information about it, they misinterpret, have wrong facts. They don't even understand it. It's almost like listening to people talking, fourth grade math, as opposed to someone who knows calculus or higher math equations. So now in my head, with the information about where the world is going, you begin to plan. And the advantage you have is in reorganizing your brain can actually be profitable for you and effective for you in planning your life successfully, because it takes far more skills learning how to psychologically create coping strategies, energy strategies for your capabilities, and being able to, one is plan out weeks, months, and then years ahead. Gives you that chess player's ability to plan because you kind of have to do it to learn how to function with whatever education and experience you did have. In my case, it was sales, so with that. And I applied it to those things. As the future unfolds, another thing I want to get into is some of the medical advances that are going to be coming probably this year and next. They're already talking about stem cells for Alzheimer's disease. And by the way, just to have you know, I may cut this program off because this week I may have caught, I'm not sure, I did bike exercises, you know, like for an hour before it and after it. But I've kind of roared the throat because I think around Sunday night and Monday I got a little bit of a fever and I was burning up. And I don't suffer any breathing things except for a little congestion in the upper thing, and I felt a little warm today. So I may have caught whatever, the variant of corona. I've had 3 boosters, so I'm not deathly sick, but a little bit. So my voice is starting to turn harsh. I knew I was going to get through this, and now I'm starting to sound like, like a old prize fighter. Anyway, well, that's maybe what I am. But anyway, so using those skills to be able to transfer, now some medical stuff, they're coming up with, these are some of the advancements that are coming in that may be beneficial to your health as you look into them. I have the stem cells are going to go into, they're doing it for Alzheimer's patient. So look into that. There's actually going to be repair of brain tissue at some point. Matter of fact, I talked to it about my neurologist, and he did a trial on it. So these are advances that are coming. I don't know if it'll be this year, but it's coming. Also this year, I'm looking into it because I did have heart surgery and may need heart, want to improve when you're in heart failure, you want to improve any heart damage you may have had when you've had heart issues. And there's now a place where you can, they can inject it with stem cells and you can get, rebuild the, it grows your heart tissue and your left ventricle up to 90% back. It goes also into the pancreas for those of you that may suffer from diabetes and stuff. Again, stem cells. And they're now changing rapidly. So look for these things to change it. Well, you know, it may be a couple of years, maybe this year, but they're coming rapidly. When I talked to my cardiologist, he knew about it instantly and knew that this was something that they would do. And it would be a game changer. And these are the kinds of advancements that we can take advantage of to live longer lives, healthier lives, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you go into also the stuff like some of the medicines that you will get, there'll be a mobileness to it. You know, there may be, in a lot of ways, some of the robotics are going to change our lives. This is going to come in. There may be people that are, instead of head into nursing homes, home health care aides, since they're so expensive, they may actually have a computer, Android devices, like that serve you in restaurants. They have them now serving people in restaurants. There may be ones that actually come to your house in a automated car, come out of the house, and it's a mechanical nurse who monitors you and does all the stuff, probably with a little nurse in a picture screen that's talking from some central location, okay? And probably there'll be a button for you to press. So there are many things that are coming. Also, in terms of TV, I'm delaying buying a TV because what is the next generation of TVs? They're already formulating boxes where people can talk to themselves. Forget about Zoom meetings. You talk about isolation and contact. The next thing someone on the does is talk about my dating site. This will be the next thing they say. Forget about them wanting to chat with me. They're now coming up with holographic TV. And they now have these devices of holographic images where you could be, you put this box in your home and a person is at another location, could be 5,000 miles away. And the camera points at her and her holographic image is in the box talking to you. It could be your mother, your father, your daughter. I could just see the next thing I see if I want to meet the date, and I ask them out for the phone number, and I'm just waiting for the one. And I say, well, where do we want to meet? The public place, you know, we can go to this place. And she says, oh, no. Do you have the AYZ? I said, yeah, I do. I use it with my family. I watch the football games in it. Well, I'll just come to the, I'll send my holographic image and we'll meet that way. Okay. I guess my holographic image can meet holographic image, and they can get along. And we can watch them get together. You got to laugh at this stuff. Listen, it's coming. Take my word for it. Maybe we just send our holographic image, and that's how we relate. I guess it's safe. We won't have to worry about wearing a mask. But there'll probably be some of the disease in the holographic image. Who knows? And for all you know, the holographic image would demand individuality. I'm just kidding. We might have to protect them as a species. Anyway, those are some of the things. I want to also, before I go, give you a... those are the things to plan out ahead, look for the changes, tolerate the ones you're not comfortable with, maybe learn to adjust to them, and of course, grab onto the ones you do, plan your life in terms of the way you plan organizing your thing, think ahead like a chess game, plan your moves out, and my plans for this year, I plan on step one, step two, step three. I've got my organization about when I might make moves on my investments, what I might do. It's like a parlor game. It's almost like by the time it happens, I already know the options. And, I'm ready to make moves. I've already planned this out. I've done talk. I've even consulted with people. My family knows about it. And I've almost got my plan like a football team. I've got my plays planned. And I'm excited. I thought about it then. I know it's going to happen. And maybe this year, maybe next. I plan for the always give yourself wide ranges because things change and things pop and delay, and you want to make sure to be there for the peak. If you narrow yourself into small windows, people always get disappointed. And now on the corona update, like I mentioned, I might have caught it myself. I'm a three-back guy. I've gotten the two Pfizer's and the booster for the Pfizer in the proper order. I think I got the first one in February, the second one in March, and then the other one at the proper time, 5 months later or so, in November. And I think I might have felt it that day. I tried to get a test. I canceled the doctor's appointment at a near doctor. That was just a checkup. And I had a guitar session because I got a new guitar. I was going to work with my guitar teacher who canceled a couple of nights because he had an Omicron, I think that's what it's called, breakout. And apparently, judging by him and my, this is not scientific, and I have a cousin who lives up in the various part in rural Georgia, and she has kids, and she got a whole outbreak at her house. And she had it, and it's apparently people, of course, are affected a little differently. Apparently, she had a cough, a fever one night. Son, same thing. Felt a little grumpy, didn't want to play. She's had a little bit of a lingering cough within upper bronchial, not quite in the lungs. And she was positive, so I might be positive. I might be negative. It's just something seasonal, like the cold weather and the change. And what looks like with this Omicron, and I've heard it might have another variant where it's comboed, them and the Omicron and the Delta have gotten together. And I've heard that it's really like what they said. It's kind of mild. This may be the way it ends. They're going to come up with other vaccines. I've been warned that you shouldn't overvax, so be cautious about that you can overvax at home. Anything too much is never good. Just do what they say. They finally figure it out. And, of course, these vaccinations have a good thing. I did find out that if you had it and then get a booster, for those that didn't get it but suffered from corona, or the Delta, they will, when they get a vaccination, they've really got good protection. So maybe this will be my protection against it. From what I understand, everyone eventually will catch the Omicron. Now they're also coming out with a pill, and they're short of test kits. I tried to get test kits. They don't have any test kits, and I just made an appointment at the local pharmacy, Walgreens. So I'm scheduled. I'd only do it on Friday, so that'll tell me if I have it, because I want to know. And so I had tests for that. And then, of course, what's your word? They're coming up with a pill so that if you're suffering from it, you can take the pill. And, that, of course, they're delayed, but eventually they'll come up. You know, they got shortages and stuff like that. So that looks hopeful. I only tell you this, that regardless of that fact that this strain looks mild, there are still people that do get sick from it. And it's better to be, do not listen to those. I try to tell you this, that no one has died from the vaccines. Don't over-vaccine, but no one's died from the standard doses that we know of. There hasn't been waves of people dying from the vaccine. There has not been, but people have died from the corona. And some survived. Let's call them for what it is. Not everyone died, but there's a percentage. Look, because it's a deadly illness, you take the precautions that are available. You know, the people that go against the vaccinations are just, you know, I mean, when I was a child, they had polio. I thought it was just wonderful. Remember, people, we had a president, Roosevelt, who got polio and was in a wheelchair. The fact that we eliminated it and had polio vaccines so people didn't get polio, or the measles vaccine, or chicken pox, or the fact that recently I took one for, you know, shingles that will prevent me because I might have had, I mean, why would you look at this so differently from any other preventative measure, from a colonoscopy, from a checkup, from all the women in the world who now, I guarantee you most of the young women all do breast checks and all that stuff and get frequent exams just to make sure. There's all sorts of preventative things we do. And all of a sudden this became a political because it, and I'm thinking about it, I thought about it today. What was the inconvenience? I mean, it really was, to me, childish that you have to wear a mask a little bit. I made jokes about it, but in the end, I looked at it. So I go into a store and I put a mask on. So I'm more cautious. So I was inconveniencing you. When you consider the kind of trials and tribulation peoples of the world, even in the development of this country, suffered, you could think of the suffering of the people in this country to establish it. Do you know how people lived here 150, 200 years ago? What kind of conditions it was in? Or in the last epidemic of 1918, in which my grandfather lost a brother, they had no vaccine. 50 million people, when the percentage of the world was far less, were wiped out, as they did in the other plagues that befell in mankind over the decades, over the centuries. So when you look at the inconvenience, we were short toilet paper. We've got some shortages now. We had a little bit fluctuation in our economy. No one starved. We kind of threw a little bit more into the national debt, which we probably would have did anyway, whether either party was in reality. And so we're whining and complaining, and then I realized, and I've been inconvenienced too. I've been trying to date, I got out of the hospital, and corona hit and delayed everything. Can't meet, can't go to normal circumstances, can't go on cruises, can't do all this. I can't travel, which is what I'm planning to do, got my passport. And you have to put it in perspective. Can you imagine these people? Do you think they can imagine what it was like in this country when we fought the Civil War or when we went to World War II? Millions and millions. And just strikingly sensitive to the inconvenience. It hasn't been that bad. And we minimized the death. Did governments on both sides make mistakes? Sure, but, you know, they have trouble dealing with it. So did China, so did all. You know, countries do all these things. And in the end, if this is all it is that I'm a little hoarse and talking, and I'm kind of glad if it is it, because that means I would have a protection. of some kind. And maybe, you know, I looked at an article. I'll check about the boosters. Don't abuse the boosters or the vaccines. Take them as what you needed. And don't overboost. Apparently that could maybe cause you problems. And anyway, make sure you keep abreast of it. But be diligent on it. Me personally, I'm probably being cautious. I have plans to play some songs in some clubs, and I've kind of been coy about that. You know, if I meet some woman, I've been limiting it to not going out to, like, social events yet, like some people already are, because I want to be diligent. I'm trying to avoid catching. Now that I may have had it, I don't want to give it to anyone. That's one of the reasons why I canceled my doctor's appointment and be working with this guy with guitar on guitar, who I'm working. It's an advanced study. I'm learning the bass is what I'm learning, and it just takes you to be stay more diligent, especially if you're in a risk group. It doesn't hurt, and we'll seem to have gotten. I still personally, it's just a personal observation. You know, the media, I avoid watching it, but, you know, they get on and they're always looking. If it ain't a hurricane, it's the corona. Is that I haven't seen the big surges yet. And if it isn't by February or March, I think we're going to become pretty accustomed and moving out of this. And, you know, we have to pay attention. And but hopefully we'll get out of it. I think the new year ahead looks good. The advances in medical technology may be relevant for people with TBI or stroke in terms of when they start to stem cell. Ask your doctors about those things and start thinking about as your plan. My plans for this year, and I'll revisit this later, is to plan out. I'm dealing with, since I made investments and I'm going to come into them, it surrounds how I'm going to work it in the time frame that my money comes to me in terms of my investment exploding. By the way, I'll tell you the stock. It's a very good time. It's got two lithium mines. I'll let you know. I'll give you the stock tip. You can take it or leave it. I'm not a stockbroker. I own the stock. That's it. So do your due diligence. I don't say you should listen to me. I'm not going to tell you to buy it or not. But it's named Lithium Americas. It's LAC. It's on the New York Stock Exchange. It has a lithium mine that's coming online to start production mid part of this year in Argentina. They've already completed the construction. And they have money in the bank for building a plant in Nevada where they're ready to get the final permits from the Bureau of Land Management. That's a federal agency. And there's a small court case with some crazy environmentalists. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere. And they will start building that sometime in the first quarter, probably in March this year, which is just a month or so away. And that's in Nevada. They're also at some point, because they have a permit on the site, they may get into a gigafactory, which is about a manufacturing with a Tesla, Ford, GM, General Motors, or companies like that. They're looking at strategic partnerships, so this will be part of it. And these are the reason why the stock will be producing within 2 years. So those two things, when you talk about Argentina, that you're looking at the company as a potential in short order of making the kind of money that is where it's going to be producing anywhere between both sites, about 80 to 100,000 tons of lithium once it's at full capacity. I think in Argentina it's going to be, since they got a 50% partnership, it'll be about initially 20,000, and in the following years, Nevada, it's going to be another 40, and then both of them have expansion capability or phase two parts of those projects to increase it from that 60 initially, 20 in Argentina and 40. And they're going to start making that money this year and into next year. So that's my wide range. Once that happens and they start maybe getting into a contract where they're partnered in a gigafactory or a battery plant in Nevada, the amount of money, it's going for $30 a share or thereabouts now, is not a bad idea. Like I said, I'm way in profit range now, even at this price. If it did nothing else, I'd be well in profit. But the potential is there. It's LAC, New York Stock Exchange. It's up to you to do it. I would suggest you do your D&D. I just gave you a little background on it. That's up to you if you want to listen to it. But I decided, since I talked about this thing and it was part of my planning and I made some money on it, you could also do that too. But, of course, do your D&D, check it, make sure, confirm. LAC, New York Stock Exchange. And you'll see, and I'll give you an update later in the year. Anyway, LAC, New York Stock Exchange. I'm going to go, because I'm starting to wear out, and I'm getting awful tired here, and my voice is getting hoarser and hoarser, and I think it's time for me to hit the sack, but hopefully it doesn't last too long. But I do want to thank you, and make sure to understand that this is going to be a good year, certainly better than the last, as we iron some of these problems out. And before I go, I'm going to take some calls just in case anyone has any questions. I'll see if they want to talk. I don't know if they do. If they have a hand up, I'll see. But I'll just check to see. And hold on one second while I'm hoarse. Maybe they can take over some of the talking. Hello.
Hey. My
Hello?
Name's Billy, man. My
Hello?
Name is... Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. This is Bill with Solutions Today. You're a caller. Did you want to speak? Were you just listening, or do you want to say something?
I want to give investment advice. That's what I want to do right there. I want to invest in vehicles, and I want to tell your listeners what kind of vehicle they should be investing in. Right? I believe that's good financial information, right? That's what you do here, right? You give financial information. Is that
no,
right?
No. This is a TBI radio program for people that survive TBI.
What
it's
is
a brain
TBI?
Injury.
That what is a TBI? That sounds like a gay dog. What is a TBI? I don't know what that means. So you're going to have to explain that to me, please.
Hold on. It's traumatic brain injury. Brain injury. It's a brain injury program. I just happened as part of my program, because it was a new year, I discussed investment advice because it's happened to be what I do. Just because you're, and so because it was a kickoff to the new year, I like to share with my audience how you plan. I'm a TBI survivor, and people who have brain injury.
To Afghanistan.
Huh?
I was in Afghanistan. I was in the Kandahar, and I was there, right? And so I might have one of them homosexual things you just talked about right there. I don't think it has anything to do with sex.
No homosexual things. No, we don't get into that. But, no, it's... this is simply Brain Injury Radio Network, and so I run the program. I just happened to do a unique one this time in that I wanted to share with my audience my plans for the year, the plans, how they do, and how they can use advantages of recovering from a TBI to actually learn how to plan. And then I shared them how I did that, and I did that with the investment advice I gave them. And then I decided...
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Does that involve a Casio calculator? Does that involve
what?
A Casio? A Casio calculator. Does that involve that?
Yes, because your Casio calculator has a lithium battery in it.
What'd you call me? Is it
the Casio
calculator?
Your Casio calculator has a lithium battery in there.
So I'm going to put my money... into where whatever I'm going to put my money. Listen, I just came back, right? So I'm going to put it under the damn policy strip right there. That's where I'm going to put it for now. I'm not sure that I trust you. So I wonder how you can make me trust you.
Right, well,
there's a lot of men there where they're
The way you do it,
I'm a little bit shell shocked, right? And there's things that went off. So, all right.
It's okay,
how do you
sir.
Make me
the way you trust it is you make sure to confirm anything you ever hear anybody tell you with your own research in D&D.
How do I do that with
the cashier? You don't do anything until you know what you're getting into. I would never advise.
What the hell does that mean? I don't know what that means. I just came back, right? Now listen, right? I'm not a rich man, obviously, right? So I'm trying to understand what to do with a little bit of money I got, right? So when I come home, right, and I'm home now, And I don't think I'm going to have to do that anymore. I had to do that a few times. So probably a few too many times. But when I come home, right, so with my cashier, rather, so how do I make sure I don't get ripped out by somebody like you?
You need to go to the library, look in the computer and do your research. And verify it before you do anything. That's how you do it. You know why? You have to trust yourself. That's what you do. You know, I don't take anything for face value that I hear over the airwaves. I tell my audience, do your own D&D. And that means get them.
So what does that mean? I mean, can I do just some basics, just some simple stuff? So a guy like you will make me buy a Range Rover when all I need is a Ford, you know.
I'm not a guy like that. I wouldn't make you buy anything. I certainly wouldn't make you buy a Grand Theft.
I believe your words are fancy. I'm not even sure they're English, but they're hypnotizing me, and I'm not sure they're English. So I have to be very careful because I can't do this over and over, right? I can't.
What you need to do is you need to, whenever you hear anything, I didn't give advice. I told people what I invested in, and I told them because that was what I did as part of my brain injury is I learned how to invest. I had to. And I decided to share it with my audience. I told them the stock. I told them what it had. And then I told them very carefully, but you need to verify that for yourself. You need to.
You had a brain injury.
Yes.
You had one too, right?
Yes.
What happened?
I fell off a bike and cracked my skull.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, okay.
So anytime, the way you avoid getting hurt, I ain't sending you a low-value rover. I'll sell you on the fact that what you do is you trust yourself. If you hear something you like, whatever it is, you make sure to go verify it. All you have to do, if you don't have a computer, you go to the library and do research on whatever it is you're looking at and confirm it for yourself. Remember, the computer is what it is. It ain't evil if you use it as a research tool to verify.
It's just like a cashier.
That's right. But I got to go because I'm suffering and a horse. I'm ready to sign off here.
How long you been white? My name's Billy. And how long you been a white man? So I want to know. For sure, because when I call back for advice, I don't know.
I understand that the human species started in Africa, so I don't know how far removed I am from that.
I believe that's a damn insult right there. I'm not sure what that's about.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
I disagree. I believe it started in Alabama. That's where I believe that human race started right there. Right on the side of mine. That's why we all got one leg shorter than the other leg. Because we walk up and down the side of a damn mountain and forever. You know, my first wife was Vietnamese. Did I tell you? She was Vietnamese. And when I was over there in 68 in Da Nang, my first wife. And you know they pronounce the consonants different than we do. So the F, the P, and the H is it's completely different, and it's almost offensive when you get to this side of the water. So my first wife's name, I don't want to even say it on the radio right here. I don't believe it's Christian to do it. I don't believe it's Christian to do it. When we got married, we went down a hill in Tennessee on bicycles, right? And she said, I don't believe the electric motor's working anymore. And I looked over at my brand new wife from Vietnamese. I saw her flying through the air, and I said, fuck, that's fuck right there.
All right, well, hey, we don't want to cuss on the air. Come on. Listen, I'm going to let you go. I'm ready to sign off, partner. Have a happy new year.
Man.
God bless you. Thank you for your service, and call in next time.
Okay.
Have a good day. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you, man. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right. And that's that caller. Sorry that caller got a little colorful. Wasn't Matt. I think he was a little off topic. I just happened to take the call. Thought maybe I'd take a few calls. That was it. That was my experience. Boy, that was not quite what I had. Anyway, you had my whole say for the new year. Apologize for the man's bad voice, but he maybe was excited. Anyway, good talking to you all. I'll see you. It's Bill DeAngelo Solutions today. I'll see you in a month. And until then, you have a good day. I'll see you soon. Bye.